Welcome to the Wine or Milk podcast, where each week we rewatch and review nostalgic movies and media from our childhood to see if it aged like wine or milk. I'm Jess.
And I'm Kyle.
And this week we're going to be watching The Sandlot.
I haven't seen this one in a pretty long time. And just like thinking about it, I'm getting wicked nostalgic.
I'm pretty sure I forced you to watch it the last time we watched it.
Forced is a strong word, but I think it was your pick, yeah.
I think it was relatively early when we started dating, and you picked a string of bad movies. And I was like, oh, yeah. No, we're going to watch something I know is good.
Yeah, it could have been in that time frame. Yeah.
You know what?
What?
It might have been after we watched Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and I didn't really like it. And I was like, we're going to watch one of my childhood movies.
Could have been, actually. But the thing I'm really nostalgic for about this is just, it's like baseball season. Here in Texas, it's like late spring feeling, early summer. Like, I just want to be outside, like, throwing the baseball around in the backyard, you know?
Texas, though, it doesn't have that spring smell. It's like that dry heat smell coming through.
Yeah.
On the East Coast, like, it still smells a little cold, but you smell, like, the sun trying to, like, come through.
Yeah.
And, like, leaves and rain. Here, it's kind of just like the earth is about to be charred. Get ready, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me nostalgic for a childhood that I didn't have. Like, this was not my childhood experience. I didn't, like, round up the kids in the neighborhood and go hit baseballs and think I was going to be a professional baseball player. That's probably the one sport I didn't think I was going to go pro in.
You finally have self-awareness when it comes to baseball.
Yeah, and so, like, I don't know. It just, like, makes me nostalgic for that feeling of, like, being out and, like, playing the cul-de-sac and stuff. But, like, I didn't grow up in that. My dad's house was, like, in a condo with a bunch of old people, and my mom lived on a wicked busy street. So, like, it wasn't my experience, but somehow this movie makes you nostalgic for something that, even if you didn't experience it.
I feel like this is, like, what America thinks it is.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You know?
And it's also, like, I kind of think of this as, like, a very boys will be boys type movie, but not in the really gross way.
Wendy Peppercorn.
Like, it's got little, like, when they're at the fair and stuff, just, like, they're being little shits, you know? But, like, not in a bad way. They're just, like, being little boys. And, like, most of the movie is that. And, like, being afraid of stuff and, like, getting into trouble all the time and blowing it out of proportion in their heads and stuff. I don't know. It's just, it's very cute. It's very cute. And what I remember is it's got a great ensemble cast that really, like, pull it together. And you're like, oh, yeah, these kids are cute.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in a neighborhood that the street was really quiet and, like, all the kids came out and played.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't play. We didn't go hit the ball together, you know. But, I mean, sometimes we played wiffle ball.
Yeah.
We weren't, like, a dedicated baseball player. So this has an extra nostalgia for me, I think. And I really think when we watch this back, I'm going to be able to quote almost all the lines.
I know that this one, like, means a lot to you. You've watched it a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, yeah, you'll probably remember most of it and be able to quote it, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, what more can you want to by, like, surprise James Earl Jones cameo at the end either?
Mm-hmm.
I remember being shocked it was him at the end the first time I watched this movie.
Really?
Yeah. I wasn't anticipating it.
Something sad that I learned, or not sad, but just, like, is when I was, like, pulling up our information to record this, apparently there was a Sandlot 2 and, like, then another third Sandlot.
Oh, those maybe don't.
A prequel.
Those don't exist. That's a glitch in the Matrix. Yeah. They're not real.
They came out, like, 10 years later, so.
It didn't need anything else.
No, I've never sat down and watched this movie and been like, damn, I really wish there was more Sandlot. And that's not, like, a knock against it. I think that's a good thing. You know, just kind of like the Goonies. You know, you watch it and you're like, damn, that was good. I enjoyed that movie. I'm happy with how it ended. Cool.
Yeah. I think the reason it doesn't need a sequel because The Sandlot highlights that perfect summer of childhood where nothing can top it, nothing can beat it. So, like, why try?
Yeah,
exactly. You know, the story has been told. There's nothing better than that. And you also know how it ends for at least the two, for Benny and, wow, I don't know the kid's name. Scott?
I don't know, man.
See, I said I was going to be able to quote everything and I can't.
Yeah, I haven't seen it enough to...
Smalls. You know, you're killing me, Smalls. That kid.
Yeah, but I haven't seen it enough to know, like, everybody. Mm-hmm. But I feel like generally familiar with the movie. I remember kind of like the big plot highlights.
Mm-hmm.
But man, even just thinking about it now, I really, really, really like, I would do just about anything to have a summer vacation right now. Like to be a 12-year-old and have summer vacation right now, I would do just about anything in the world.
You kind of like just brushed past the best part of the movie. Like, what a ridiculous idea that this kid wants to fit in so bad, knows nothing about baseball, but wants to fit in so badly that when the ball goes over the fence and they can't play anymore, he takes out a Babe Ruth signed baseball.
Yeah.
And it is immediately hit over the fence. And they have to spend the entire summer trying to get it back.
No, yeah, that's part of me always like mega cringes at that because I'm a real collector of things. Yeah. Objects have sentimental value for me.
Yeah.
And that happens. And I'm like, oh, God.
Oh. Well, he doesn't know what he's doing.
I know.
Baby Ruth. Who is she? You know, but like, what a phenomenal idea for like conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And then the villain is the Beast.
The Beast. Looking at the poster, it has the Beast's paw like on top of the baseball bat. It's not that big of a paw looking at it now.
It's enormous compared to the kid's hands.
I guess so. But they're kids.
It's swallowing the kid's hands. Kids have big hands.
Do they?
I feel like that's the first, when you're looking at like babies and stuff, you know they're becoming humans when their hands look real. I feel like their hands grow.
No, yeah, that's faster. A good point. We have some kids on our street, and I'm like, oh yeah, your hands look like human hands now.
Right, they're instead not of fat just baby like, hands anymore.
Like round things with little dots on the end.
What the f*** are you looking at?
Their hands.
I'm concerned about your eyes.
Anyway, what's like maybe your top memory about this movie? Or not even like this movie, but just like, what is the top nostalgic thing that this invokes for you?
Easily the monologue when, I don't remember their names. This is going to make me sad. The kid with the red hair who's a catcher explains how to make a s'more.
Oh, yeah.
Take the Malo. Yeah, easily. Best part of the movie for me. Or Squints telling the story of the Beast with his, like, you know, up in the treehouse.
Yeah.
That whole scene in general, the treehouse scene is amazing to me.
My brother and I had a treehouse when we were little kids. We had it in our backyard.
But I always wanted a treehouse.
It wasn't like a huge one, but like we could climb up and go into it and stuff.
Was it in a tree or was it one of those like sheds that's on stilts basically that you climb up in?
No. It was in between two trees.
That is cool.
Yeah, they were like right. They were huge trees, like literally right next to each other. I feel like trees don't normally grow that close. But then my stepdad like put a platform in between them and like some walls up and it had like a tarp roof and then like a little rock wall at the base of it that we would use when we were playing soccer in the backyard as our goal.
Mm.
So it was like multi-purpose room, you know,
but outside.
But yeah, it was pretty fun actually having it.
I always wanted one of those.
It could fit like four kids probably. That was like about the limit. It wasn't like theirs.
I also trust your stepdad to build like a treehouse with integrity.
Yeah.
Like I get concerned watching people just make them in their yards.
There are some pretty huge tree houses in our neighborhood. When I walk Luna, I see them and I'm like, wow.
I have literally never seen a tree house in our neighborhood.
I'll point them out to you the next time we walk.
I would be a really good deer for hunters. Never looking up. Just strolling around oblivious. Bam. That's the closest equivalent I've had to being in a tree house. Like my friend has woods in her backyard and like there's like a little deer. What do I call them? Fort? Up there.
I don't think that's what they're called.
They're like up there, like a deer fort.
I don't think that's what they're called, but yeah, I know what you're talking
crawled
about.
Crawled up there as an adult once. Got scared the hunter was going to get mad and find me, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, very... Anyway, that's my most nostalgic scene. The treehouse scene. What about you?
I think I love that scene because I love s'mores, but I think the one... I don't even know if it's like nostalgic in that, like, it makes me... It like reminds me of an experience I had, but it more is nostalgic because... For me, it's like the scene of the movie.
Is it the 4th of July fireworks?
No.
Oh, the night game?
Oh my God, I'll let you know.
I'm excited. I want to guess. I want to know.
It, for whatever reason, this is the one that like stuck out to me the most as a kid. And so when I see it, I literally like teleport back to my body seeing it for the first time with my dad. It's the carnival scene.
Oh, when they're all vomiting?
Yeah. It might be because the song playing is all saxophone, and that mm-hmm. was this instrument I wanted to play when I was a kid, so maybe it just, like, really stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, that scene, like, is this movie. That's, like, the quintessential scene of the movie.
Oh, no. I don't know. I mean, it's a good scene, don't get me wrong. I hate all the puke.
It's wicked gross, but I feel like it really just kind of encapsulates a lot of the characters. Like, they're really coming together as friends and stuff. Like, I don't know. For whatever reason, that one always sticks out to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like it because it's wicked gross. But like I said, it, like, literally teleports me back to watching it for the first time. Maybe, too, it's filmed really nicely. It's got a lot of, like, great camera angles and, like, dynamic set because, like, all the flashing lights and stuff. It really, I think it also kind of captures the feeling of being overwhelmed at, like, a local carnival type thing, you know?
Yeah. It makes me want funnel cake really bad.
Is that,
like, fried dough? Oh my god, what's wrong with you?
Is that...
It's like they put all this batter in a funnel, and then they swirl it around so it makes, like, a little nest in the oil. Mm-hmm. You, like, drip it right into the oil, and then they flip it and fry the other side, and then they put tons of powdered sugar on it.
So that's different from fried dough?
No, because you put it in the funnel, and then, like, you, like, drip it all over into, like, a little nest. It's fried dough, but it's not, like puffs of fried dough. Does that, not like Zeppelis.
I don't know, man. I just know fried dough. What I don't know hell? Most of the words that you're saying right now.
A funnel. You know, like a funnel. I guess I did a bad job. I grew up in New Jersey. I never took you to the boardwalk.
No, we've never been.
I'll have to take you one day when it's COVID safe. And we'll get funnel cake. It's like one of the things you can eat as a vegetarian.
I just know fried dough. And you put a lot of powdered sugar on it.
So many things are fried dough. Beignets, Zeppelis, donuts, funnel cake.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about.
I don't.
Like, fried... Like, the things that we got were, like, basically, like, they almost look like pita bread. They were just, like, big and flat and fried dough. We might be talking about the same thing.
I feel like I need you to Google funnel cake right now. Oh, man. Go to the one below. The one below is more accurate looking.
It's kind
of... See how it comes out in a funnel? It's like when you make those castles with sand in your hand as a kid.
It looks kind of gross. It looks like a plate of...
Get... out of here. You would eat that and you know it.
I would, but just like the pictures aren't very appetizing. It looks like a plate of fried macaroni and cheese.
No, that one's just overdone.
When you Google fried dough, the first result is fried dough versus funnel cake.
Well, look at us.
That's what I'm talking about.
We got ourselves into a little tiff that other people have had across the world, apparently. Or across America.
Across America.
I don't think a lot of other countries have fried dough. The best part about funnel cake is you get to peel it apart and mm-hmm. more pieces touch the oil, so it's more delicious.
It did look more crispy. It definitely looked crispier. Man, anyway, now I want fried food.
Yeah, you can't really eat fried food either. There's something fried for you.
Oreos. Mm. Anyway.
Yeah, I would say treehouse scene. Obviously, the Wendy peppercorn scene is iconic. I also love the scene where they're scrambling to try to forge Babe Ruth's signature
mm-hmm.
on the ball. Another good one. No, it's just another iconic scene. Sorry, now I just keep going. The scene where they're explaining who Babe Ruth is and they're giving all of the nicknames and rattling them off.
I love that one.
Yeah, it's just so good. There's so many moments. Weirdly enough,
that's the one that sticks out to me the most.
What's in the treehouse?
Yeah, I know. Just that line is probably the one I remember the best.
Mm-hmm. I think this movie is a great coming of age. It's not a slice of life. I think it's strongly a coming of age movie, which is why I like it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's because it's really about all of them coming together as like a group of friends as well and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's just something magical about summer vacation in movies. I feel like nobody actually grows up during summer vacation. If anything, we all like regressed in age from year to year during summer vacation. But in movies, summer vacation, everybody always grows up.
Well, Smalls does. I mean, he transforms from being shy and, you know, not willing to try new things. And then he fully embraces baseball, you know, gets over his fear of the beast,
mm-hmm.
makes a new friend, you know, a lot of bravery there for him.
But yeah, I feel like we could just keep going and recap the whole thing. So how do you think this one's going to age?
It's a wine.
It's a wine.
It's easy. I don't have wine to even watch it to know it's going to be a wine.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough to see what would make this not a wine. Just because it's got a good cast. It doesn't really, like, take a lot of risks. by, like, from what I remember trying to make, like, crass jokes or something. It's just, like, kids being kids, like I kind of said. So, like, I don't know. I think it's going to age pretty well. Maybe the pacing is potentially the thing I'm going to look out for, is the pacing.
I don't think the pacing is going to be bad, because I think in the pacing, you're getting a lot of character development.
No, I think so as well. I think so as well.
So, I mean, it's going to be, it's a gem. It's an American classic, just like the sport.
Yeah, like you said, I think it really encapsulates what America thinks of itself.
Yeah, it's what America, like, wants to be and thinks it is, and
yeah,
it's really not. But now, yeah, all these kids have been in part-time jobs over the summer, even at age 12, to, like, yeah, afford anything.
Yeah, literally. But yeah, I too think that most likely it'll be a line. So give us the facts, though.
Sure. There's a lot of names in here, so I'm going to fumble through this probably pretty terribly. So the movie The Sandlot came out in 1993. It was directed by David Mickey Evans, produced by Dale De La Torre and William S. Gilmore, written by David Mickey Evans and Robert Gunter, starring Tom Geary, Mike Vitar, Patrick Renna, Chauncey Lapardi, Marty York, Brandon Adams, Grant Gelt, Shane Obedzinski.
I think that's right.
Oof. This is just a lot of letters all in a row. My bad. I should have took a breath before trying that one. Victor DiMattia, Dennis Leary, Karen Allen, and James Earl Jones. Last but finally not least, music by David Newman, and the movie runs for 101 minutes, which is an hour 41. So nice and quick.
Yeah, not too bad. I feel like we've seen David Newman's name.
You just eat a lot of Newman's popcorn, so I think that's what that's running for you. And Newman's lemonade.
So he did Anastasia.
We haven't watched that, though, for this.
Yeah, I feel like Brave Little Toaster. I don't know. Oh, that was the 80s, 90s. There's got to be something here. DuckTales. Mighty Ducks. Oh, wow, this guy's done a lot of stuff from my childhood.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Matilda.
There it is. I think that, oh, and Jingle All the Way, Anastasia, 102 Dalmatians. Oh, so yeah, this guy's done a lot of stuff. Ice Age. Cool. I'm excited to see the music, because really the only thing that's sticking out to me is
the tequila song. Yeah.
Yeah, and then also, it had a budget of $7 million and made $34.3 million at the box office. Seems a little bit low. Like, they did well. I'm just surprised. I figured this would have, like, blown it out of the water. Yeah. But Wikipedia says it has since become a cult film, which I think I would unequivocally agree with.
It's a cult film. I would say I'm more of a fan of this one than Hocus Pocus.
Really?
I think so.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
Has a lot of this. I think this one I relate to a lot more. I didn't, you know, almost get taken by witches and had my soul sucked out, but this
that you remember.
Sure. Sure. But The Sandlot is a bit more familiar to me. Yeah. So.
Cool. Well, I just got pumped up to watch this from talking through it. So, want to go watch?
Sure.
Cool. We will see you in like 30 seconds.
This movie made me realize I never, ever want to play baseball in jeans.
Oh my god, yeah. When he was like, oh yeah, tomorrow, come back in jeans. I was like, sorry, jeans?
Some of them were wearing shorts. I don't know. I don't understand why jeans was a requisite.
Maybe he saw his shorts and was like, there's no way that this dude has shorts that are appropriate for baseball. So, jeans it is.
It made me so hot and uncomfortable because, and not in a sexy way, I'm just kidding. No, because they made it seem like it was a very hot summer, and the thought, yeah, of being in jeans was excruciating.
And like they were sliding all the time, like the little clips and stuff they were showing, mm-hmm, they would have had like all the like dirt up their legs and stuff. I don't know.
Well, better than sliding in shorts without socks, though, because I used to do that all the time, yeah, when I was playing my beer league.
I know, and you would come over to my house, and your leg was like, it literally looked like it got mauled by like a monster cheese grater.
I don't know why I did that to myself. I knew I should wear socks, but I was like 18 and dumb and like, oh, who wants to wear high socks? I don't know. I really have no explanation for why I was doing that.
Yeah. So the story is Jess was playing in like a beer league type thing in between college, like in between the
years the summers of between, yeah.
And so every time she would play, she would come visit me and or I'd go and visit her and her leg was just always covered in like bloody scabs.
Because I was like, oh, it's fine. I just won't slide, you know.
And then you did.
And I did anyway. Because it's better. It's actually safer for everybody if safer. I slide. So no one really slid too much. Because I played mostly with women of an older age. You know, no one really slid much.
Like 30s and 40s, not like 80s.
Yeah, no, for the record. Yeah, no. I didn't.
Because I'm 30 now. And so hearing women of an older age when you're describing them is kind of upsetting.
Most of those women were in their 40s and 50s. Okay. They were all like, they all could easily be my mom or my grandma.
Yeah.
But no one really slid, but then like instinct kicks in when you're running.
Yeah.
I also maybe took extra bases that other people might not have taken because I felt like, oh, you know, young and like I could, you know, zip away around the bases. I don't know. I was an idiot. I was like 18, 19 years old. I was stupid.
Yeah.
What can I say?
And so, yeah, you would, every time you'd visit, you would just be like cut all over your legs from sliding.
Oh, the size of my calves are still scarred from it.
Yeah.
I was so stupid. I don't know why I did that.
I don't either.
I guess I like to look tough. Look at me and my bloody legs. I don't know.
I think that might have been it. Before we get too deep into it, though, I just wanted to say a quick happy birthday to one of our listeners, Nicole. She's a big supporter of the podcast, reaches out to us all the time on social media. And so we just want to wish you a very happy birthday. I think it'll be technically a belated
I think birthday. By a day. But yeah, thanks so much for listening and thanks for supporting us. And I hope you have an amazing birthday.
Yeah. But yeah, back to The Sandlot. This one went a little faster than I thought it would. Like an hour and 40 isn't like super long. It's also not like super short, you know, but they had like a lot of really fun. It kind of felt a little sitcom-y in a way, but not really like a sitcom. I don't know. They just had like flashes between like boyhood scenes. That was kind of fun for me.
I think too. In my head, I thought that they would lose the Babe Ruth ball earlier in the movie, and I forgot how long the setup was, but I liked it because it kind of, like, it did set up the stakes, but also it gave the boys time to, like, gel and trust each other.
Yeah.
So it felt more genuine when they came together as a team because they had already accepted Smalls, you know?
Yeah, in my head, too, the whole movie was about that ball, but really it was only the last 20 or so minutes.
I timed it. It was more like the last 40 minutes.
Last 40?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was actually kind of nice because they come together. You just see, you know, those boys will be boys, but like them befriending one another, growing as a team, like you were saying. And then the conflict happens. It was kind of nice. Mm-hmm. I liked it.
I mean, there was other conflict. It was like real life conflict, though, of like not fitting in and like having a stepdad you don't really know how to be around.
How to kiss the hot lifeguard when you're markedly younger than her.
Why was his mouth open so wide? His mouth was constantly open. So gross.
I don't know. Oh my god. Speaking of the kids, though, the one kid that always repeated what I think it was his brother said looks just like a young Jon Favreau.
Oh my god. Actually, now that you say it, I see that.
In my head, I had a moment of, is that Jon Favreau? And then I was like, wait, no.
This is 93. He was already on Friends then. Does Jon Favreau have kids? Or nieces and nephews?
Maybe. I should look up what that kid's like name was because he really looks exactly like Jon Favreau.
Oh, their names Timmy and Tommy or something like that?
No. Oh, yeah. Timmy and Tommy. Yeah. I thought it was Jimmy and Johnny.
Oh, my God. No.
Yeah, but I think it was Tommy. If you rewatch Tommy, he's the one that repeats his brother all the time. He looks just like Jon Favreau. It's really funny. Also, I loved the names that all the kids had. Some of them were just their names, like Bertram. But then, like, Yaya, what a great nickname.
Yaya?
Yeah, I love that.
He's a cutie. He's a kid that says Yaya all the time. And at one point, he said something else, like, doubled up.
He was like, no, or something like that.
No, I don't think so. I can't remember what it was. I should have written it down.
Yeah. He did say that, though. But yeah, how about a quick run through of the plot?
That's on you, man.
Yeah, I was asking if you were ready for it.
I mean, I just watched the movie, So I probably don't need a run through, but I'd love to hear your take on it.
My take on it?
Yeah, like what were the important pieces you pulled out?
Gotcha.
I think the biggest plot hole of this movie, though, speaking of the opening scene, who the hell took the picture of the kids all at the Sandlot? There were like no adults in this movie. Like, who took the picture?
The blind guy.
Mr. Myrtle? Yeah. First of all, don't call him the blind guy. Mr. Myrtle, who happens to be blind.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a great candidate for using a 1960s camera to take a picture that has people perfectly framed.
Probably not. Yeah, that's a good point. Good feedback. The Beast.
He made it with his Erector set.
He made a remote-controlled photograph.
Where'd they get a camera? They could barely afford a ball to play with.
I don't know.
They must have collected a lot of bottles for that bad boy.
Anyway, so the Sandlot. It starts with opening credits. We get the story of Babe Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the narrator transitions to speaking about another legend of baseball, a neighborhood legend of baseball, kid he grew up with, Benjamin Franklin Rodriguez.
You're just going to brush over the story of Babe Ruth? Are you just a bitter Sox fan? You don't want to talk about how great he was and how he called his homer in the bottom of the ninth?
I mean, I guess it's interesting. I just didn't feel like it was critical for the plot of the Sandlot.
I think it's pretty critical to the plot of the Sandlot.
Okay. So yeah, Babe Ruth is a really good baseball player. The story is, it was the end of the game, tied game, bases loaded maybe? Can't remember if bases were loaded.
Bottom of the ninth.
He says the next pitch, he's going to hit it over the fence. He sticks his baseball bat out, real iconic pose, and then he does it. And that's Babe Ruth, and he's legend.
Yep.
Everybody knows this, yes.
I'm much more satisfied now.
Okay.
The Yankees fan to me had to hear you say it.
It didn't feel important, but okay.
It is important to me.
I went back for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
It's important to me, and it's important to a point I need to make later.
Okay.
In this story.
We'll see if it... if it makes the cut.
Oh my god.
Okay.
I'm gonna start editing now. I'm gonna cut everything you say. It's gonna be me talking into the abyss. No, Kyle.
Oh my god. That actually would be really fun to just like hear what an episode would sound like. Anyway. So we hear about his...
I think the podcast would be significantly shorter if I cut out everything you said.
Rude. Rude.
The kids got me in a mood to just insult you.
They had some pretty good insults.
I know. Yeah. Made me feel like I need to get snappy.
Fart sniffer.
You play ball like a girl.
I don't think that's a good insult. That didn't age well. Anyway.
It's an iconic insult, though.
We hear about Benjamin Franklin Rodriguez, better known as Benny, and we jump back in time to a school baseball game, and there's a pickle happening. If you're not familiar with baseball, a pickle is when there's a runner trying to go between two bases. The defending team has the ball and they're throwing it back and forth to try and get him.
The fielding team.
Sure. The runner is trying to like evade them and get back to one of the bases to be safe. And Benny is very good at this.
So you'll explain a pickle, but you won't explain Babe Ruth's legendary story?
Yeah, because it wasn't... The pickle comes up three times in the movie. Four times in the movie, actually. Babe Ruth, the point about Babe Ruth in the opening wasn't that important for the movie.
It's the most important person in the entire film. There'd be no conflict without Babe Ruth.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so we are introduced to the main character, Scotty.
Scotty Smalls.
And the kid running the pickle was Benny.
Benny the Jet Rodriguez.
Exactly. Scotty just moved to this school at the very end of the school year. So it wasn't really enough time for him to make friends before summer vacation. And so...
Hate to stereotype, but Scotty looks like...
Young Sheldon.
A big nerd.
He's a wicked big dweeb.
A cute dweeb. Very polite. Cute kid.
He's a cute kid. Always has his hair meticulously combed.
Mm-hmm. Always looks like he just got out of the shower.
Yeah.
Like his hair is perpetually wet.
And we learn that Scotty's dad passed away and his mom got remarried to a dude named Bill. And Scotty wants his stepdad, Bill, to teach him how to play catch because he literally can't throw.
I loved young Scotty Smalls trying to like figure out if he should call Bill dad or Bill.
Oh, yeah. He always reversed it in whatever scene.
So uncomfortable to watch, but I thought it was really well done.
It was cute. That was a note I actually had. I think that the kid who played Scotty was really good.
Oh, agreed.
He was really strong.
Yeah.
But yeah,
the movie would be totally different.
Oh, completely different.
Without a good actor in that role, and I think he really pulled it off well.
Yeah, he really, really knocked it out of the park.
He came off as authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Fair. And I think that's hard sometimes for kid actors to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, he is definitely one of, in the top tier of kid actors that we've seen.
There's been a lot of good kid actors we've seen, though.
I know. And that's a testament to how strongly he performed. So yeah. He has to play catch. Bill's doesn't have time for it right now, but we are introduced to the main conflict of this movie, the Babe Ruth ball.
Mm-hmm.
Later, we learn that Bill got it from his father. It's a signed ball by Babe Ruth.
Yeah, Bill has a whole trophy room.
Yeah, of like sports memorabilia, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Kind of want one. So it's summer vacation. Scotty, trying to make some friends, follows some of his classmates to the sandlot. And he wants to play. And he just kind of...
The sandlot is where all the neighborhood kids play baseball.
Yeah. And he just, like, hangs out in the back outfield. Oh. He just, like, edges into the game. It's really funny.
Oh, it's so uncomfortable. I forgot how awkward that scene used to make me feel as a kid.
Doesn't even, like, ask to play. Doesn't say hi. He just, like, slowly, like, comes out of the bushes and then starts hitting his glove, like, in his hand. Like, the...
So cringe.
Oh, yeah.
No one does that with their glove.
Oh, it was really uncomfortable. This is when we're also introduced to the Beast, which is a gigantic dog that lives over the fence in the outfield of the sandlot.
You don't know it's a gigantic dog yet. You just hear creepy breathing and rattling chains.
And like growling and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so Scotty, while he's like trying to insert himself, keeps hearing a mysterious being over the fence.
Yeah. We also get a really cool line from the narrator where he says that, like, they never really start the game or stop the game. It's just always going. I don't know. It's just, like, the way he, like, talked about the game was really fun.
Mm-hmm. The narrator is older Scotty, by the way.
Yes.
For the record.
So, Benny is at bat. He hits the ball into the outfield for Scotty Smalls, and it just hits him right on the head.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to throw it back in, and he literally can't figure it out. So he's wicked embarrassed. All the kids are laughing at him, and he runs home.
I would, too, at that point.
Oh, yeah. No shame in that.
If a whole field of kids starts laughing at you, it's okay to run home and cry, everyone. Just say no.
Yes.
You have permission to do that.
And so he's back home, and he's playing with this, like, experimental thing, this Erector set.
Mm-hmm.
And his mom comes in, and she's like, you got to make some friends, dude. You can't, like, the last three summers, you've just been alone all day in your room playing with toys.
She's like, I'm a little worried you're going to turn out to be a real weirdo.
Yeah.
You got to get out there and make some friends.
And she gives him permission to get in trouble. Oh, also fun fact, the mom is played by Karen Allen, who is better known as Marion Ravenwood in the Indiana Jones movies.
Mm-hmm. Good catch.
Yeah. I was like, she looks really familiar, but she has like reddish hair in this movie. Mm-hmm. And in the others, she has like a dark brunette hair. So I was like, I wasn't all the way sure, but I was pretty sure.
She's a very like iconic look. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I just watch a lot of Indiana Jones as a kid.
I think I might have as well, but she's looking great. Mom's looking great.
Mom, he's got a hot mom.
Yep.
Smalls' mom has got Smalls' it going on. Smalls' mom
has got it going on. So Scotty's like, okay, I want to get in trouble. I want to make some friends. But the way I'm going to do it is with these kids and playing baseball, I got to learn how to play.
Mm-hmm.
So he asks his stepdad to help him play catch again. Stepdad's busy. Mom steps in and is like, you're helping him.
You got to do this or it's going to be an unhappy marriage.
Exactly.
Help out my kid.
So they go in the backyard and have the worst game of catch I've ever seen.
Oh, he actually, one time he... goes to, instead of throwing the ball back to Bill, he just runs it back up to him and puts it in his glove.
Yeah, which is this honestly the saddest thing in the entire movie.
Oh, it's painful. It's so painful.
The look in Bill's eye of just pure disappointment, too. But yeah, so they end up, the game of catch resolves by Bill repeatedly telling him to keep his eye on the ball. And so he ends up putting the glove in front of his face and the ball, he catches the ball, but it hits him in the eye. He's got a black eye.
Big black eye.
And so I don't know if it's like the next day, same day, whatever. He's sitting out on his stoop and he had like a crappy old plastic glove that's broken now. And he's looking sad, dejected, injured with his black eye. When Benny rolls up and
Benny's
sees him.
Benny's the best.
Benny's so sweet.
Benny's the best.
And he sees Scotty there and he's like, hey, come on, we're going to the Sandlot. Come play with us. And Benny's like, Scotty's like, oh, no, I can't, you know, blah, blah, blah.
My glove is broken.
But I think really his pride's also injured. He doesn't want to go. And Benny's like, well, I have a glove right here. And he just pulls it out of his
back pocket.
Back. Like, it couldn't have been in his pocket. It had to be tucked into his jeans.
You know, like, in the movies where the people put the gun in like the back of their pants and you're like, they're going to shoot their butthole.
Yes.
That's kind of what I imagine Benny doing.
Just
pulling this glove out of the back of his pants.
And later on, he also pulls, same day, he also pulls a baseball hat out of the exact same spot. He just walks around with stuff in his pants all the time.
He's the Mary Poppins of baseball.
Yeah.
Just pulling out equipment from his jeans.
So they all go to... I guess Benny and Scotty meet up with the rest of the Sandlot kids at like the grocery store where Ham is doing a Great Bambino impression.
Mm-hmm.
And Scotty's like, who's the Great Bambino? He clearly doesn't know who Babe Ruth is, which is important given the Babe Ruth ball that his stepdad has. They end up heading over to the Sandlot. Nobody wants him on the team. Everybody thinks he's going to suck. They play a little ball. Turns out
he does suck.
He sucks. And so Benny has to go out and be like, look, dude, you got to figure this out. You know, you're thinking too much.
He's like, I'm trying here. I'm really trying to get you to be included, but I need like 10% back.
Yep. And so he says, you're thinking too much. You just got to have fun. If you were having fun, you would have caught that ball, which I kind of liked. I thought that was a fun way to put it.
He also says, just put your glove up and I will take care of the rest.
Which is incredibly badass.
But it also reminds me of Babe Ruth.
It does, yeah.
He said he's going to call the shot. He said, put your glove up and I'll put it to you.
And you know what? To be fair to Benny, I think what he accomplishes is significantly more impressive than what Babe Ruth did.
Considering how bad Scotty Smalls is at baseball, I would have to agree.
And Babe Ruth just had to hit it over a wall generally in left field. He had to land it inside of the glove of a small child who sucks at baseball.
Who didn't even try to move for the ball. He just held it up, closed his eyes, and said, please catch it.
Yeah. Incredibly impressive.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
So, he does end up catching it. Scotty gets his confidence back. He's able to throw it into second. And thus starts the friendship of the Sandlot kids.
Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, now Scotty's just good at baseball.
Because he's having fun now. I bought that. You know, throwing's not that hard. He was overthinking it. You know? Then he just started playing with, you know, his gut. And having a good time. And it wasn't like he was a god at it, but he could, like, keep up.
He's going to be a permanent right fielder for life, let's be real.
Yeah. So, the kids are all playing. They're having, like, a little pickup game. Mm-hmm. And Ham's up at bat. And he does the Great Bambino thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whiffs. But then he's like, no, guys, this is the one. He smacks the ball out of the park. Unfortunately, it lands right in the Beast's pen. And so, day's done. They don't have any more balls.
Mm-hmm. It goes over the fence into the yard where the Beast is.
Yeah. And Scotty's like, he's trying to be all cool now. He's got his confidence. Yeah. Cool boy's confidence. And so he tries to like climb over the fence and all the kids run and are like, no, you can't. You'll die. And we get like a little bit of a story. Or no. Now they're like, you don't know about the Beast. It's camp over time. Camp out time. Camp out time.
Camp out. They have a camp out in the treehouse.
So next scene is they're all in the treehouse.
My favorite scene of the entire movie.
The intro to this scene is the scene that you called out, the s'mores scene, which was really fun. Except that he's making it over candles, which makes me wildly nauseous.
Yo, I have tried to do that because of this movie, and I used a scented candle.
Oh, awful.
It was disgusting. The marshmallow was gross. Also, he lit the marshmallow on fire. I understand when you have a candle, you can't toast it. But I just hate that technique of roasting a marshmallow.
No, and you know, I had a lot of young cousins who thought that was the way that you make s'mores, and I blame this movie for that.
To stick your marshmallow on fire?
Yeah, to purposely burn it.
If you just burn it real quick, just the outside gets burnt, but the inside doesn't melt.
Exactly.
You know, and then it doesn't melt your chocolate.
Yeah, no, it's not acceptable.
I did see a trick, though, because when I tried to use a candle to make a marshmallow or a s'more or whatever, I only had one candle. He had multiple rubber banded together to make a bigger flame. And I actually do think that is an intrinsically important part of a candle s'more technique.
It's still a candle, though.
Yeah, but if you have, like, and they were non-scented candles, they're pretty big flames. Like, I think you could pull it off.
I wouldn't try it personally. And I, you know, I just love s'mores too much. I wouldn't want to ruin them. But if you give it a shot, let us know how it goes.
Well, we're adults now. We have like a little bonfire, you know, so we don't have to worry about that.
Yes.
But, you know, they're kids. I don't trust them with a bonfire.
No, not at all. So, yeah, this entire treehouse extravaganza was to let us know about the beast. We get the little backstory. Apparently, he was a junkyard dog that got fed
whole sides of beef.
Yeah, until he just ate burglars, and apparently he ate 172 of them.
173.
Mm-hmm. And then the owner, the police came, and the police chief was Squint's dad, who's telling the story, and they had to...
This is grandfather.
Grandfather, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And he was forced to, like, tie him up under the house and all that. It's, you know, it's a great scene because it's like typical hyperbole storytelling from kids. It's really good.
Well, yeah, because Squints goes, he killed probably about 173 guys.
Yeah, it's so good.
I also think, like, you know, if this dog really killed 173 people,
they would have put him down.
Probably wouldn't have survived. They probably would have been like, oh, yeah, you can just put him in dog jail. It's fine.
Yeah.
No big deal.
But this is where we get the iconic forever. And it zooms in on the guy's mouth. I love it.
Yeah, meaning the dog has to be chained up forever.
Yep.
He got life in prison. No parole. So basically, though, if the ball goes over the fence, that's it forever. You can't get it back.
Forever.
The beast has it. They said over 150 balls have gone over the fence and they've never gotten one back. And the only kid that ever tried to go over was killed.
Was eaten.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
By the beast.
So the beast is not to be trifled with.
Mm-mm.
And now it's an indiscriminate amount of days later. It's the hottest day of the summer. None of the kids want to play except for Benny. They take it a vote and they decide
pool they're going day. To the pool.
And so all the kids run to the local pool, they jump in, and Squint is eyeing down the lifeguard. He's got a big old crush on her.
Eyeing down. Later, tonguing down.
Wendy Peppercorn, he is madly in love with her, so much so that he fake drowns himself, to make sure that she has to rescue him, give him mouth to mouth. And then he springs one on her and makes out with her. He holds her head down. Awful. Not a good thing to do. Hilarious scene. Really love the confidence of fake drowning yourself.
Okay, I have a couple of things to say about this.
Okay.
One, the kid who plays Squints has probably the definition of a shit-eating grin.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you look it up in the dictionary, it's a picture of Squints about to go drown himself.
Yeah, not even, like... just in this scene, in the whole movie, he always has that grin on.
He does it distinctly before he goes to the diving board to jump in, and then distinctly after while she's doing CPR in between breaths.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Iconic face. Second of all, one thing I always think about is his plan had a lot of luck. Because at one point, the male lifeguard is about to do mouth-to-mouth, and she jumps in.
Yeah.
You know? So his plan might not have actually worked.
It might not have, yeah. He got lucky. He really did.
He really did get lucky. Third of all, I really like, because Wendy, she clearly knows he kind of has a crush on her, because mm-hmm. he like waves to her before. But when he starts to drown, she takes her really, really badass white sunglasses, takes off and shucks them before she jumps in.
And
her whistle. Yeah. So I appreciate that she takes her job super, super seriously.
Yeah. She threw them like 50 yards.
Yeah.
Like really whipped them.
And they were nice sunglasses. Like
Patrick Mahomes sidearm throws that thing away.
Oh, dude, for real. She could play on the Sandlot. So yeah, I mean, obviously a kid was drowning. She was taking her job seriously, but she also, you don't need to whip your sunglasses like that. That shows me she really was frazzled by Squints.
Yeah.
They all However, after he gets kicked out, though, she does still smile at him and like, even right after, she gives him a little smile. Yeah. Because she sees he's upset.
So, yeah, they all get kicked out of the pool. The next scene is the narrator talking about the night game. It's the 4th of July. All the fireworks are going off, and it's the only time that the sky is bright enough for them to have a night game, which is pretty fun.
Such a cool idea.
Yeah, it is. The scene went on a little bit too long, though. They did, like, a solid 2 minutes of just, like, showing kids reacting to fireworks, which I didn't super need, but it was a cool idea.
As far as, like, nitpicking, like, I'm okay with that. You could, like, there's not much other things for you to complain about right now, so.
Yeah.
I'll let it slide as a personal protector of this movie.
So, again, some amount of days later, they're all playing when some kids with, like, full-on baseball uniforms roll up to the sandlot on their bikes.
Mm-hmm. The bougie team.
The bougie team, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Insults start getting thrown around, and it ends in, like, a challenge between the sandlot kids and the bougie kids to play down at the bougie kids' field.
They have a full, real field. They don't have, like, a little sandlot that they've converted.
And so they jump forward a day to the next day to the game. This was wicked funny. Ham is the catcher, and he was, like, insulting and distracting all of the other players while they were at bat. It was a very funny scene. They end up demolishing the other team, and to celebrate, they go to the carnival. And this is where, I think it was Bertram rolls up with...
Chaw.
Yeah. Chewing tobacco. He's like, I've been saving this for, like, an important day or whatever. They all put, like, just an
awful amount
of chewing tobacco, like, in their throat.
Like, they also say you chew it. They actually chew it. They're not, like, you know, pocketing it in their gum. So they're just doing it incredibly. They're swallowing so much stuff they should not be swallowing.
It looked like they were eating beef jerky.
Oh, God. Disgusting.
But we get the really wonderful tequila song. A lot of fun. Oh, wait, I forgot to mention, during the baseball game with the bougie kids, we also get what was my favorite song in the entire movie, written by the director. I spent like an hour and a half last night trying to figure out the name of this, and I couldn't. It doesn't have a name. But it was made, not by the director, the music producer guy. It's really good. It's a jazz song that he made just for this film. He, like, wrote and composed it and all that stuff, and it's really fantastic. It also ends up being the credit scene. Really, really good.
Yeah, I went upstairs to brush my teeth after this movie ended, and I just heard you playing that song over and over again downstairs. I was like, okay.
I tried to get Google to recognize it, you know, when you can, like, play it and it'll tell you what the song is.
Mm-hmm.
And it had no idea. It literally, the closest match was a 10% match to In the Mood.
Oh, well, I guess it got jazz at least on the radar correctly.
Yeah. So yeah, it literally had no idea what the song was. It took me a long time to find it, but it's really good. It's really, really good.
But now they're listening to tequila while on carnival rides.
Yeah, like the tilt-a-whirl, it looked like it might have been. And predictably, they all get violently ill and throw up all over themselves and everybody else at the carnival. And the narrator lets us know that after that, they all swore off the hard stuff, and it was only bazooka from there on out.
This made me think of you because you hate carnival rides.
And I probably would hate carnival rides even more if I was wolfing down chewing tobacco.
What's your favorite carnival ride?
The ones where you can win prizes.
That's not a ride. That's a game.
I don't really like carnival rides. I don't trust that they can set them up nicely. They all have such confined space that you just, like, spin around and stuff. And I'm not good at that type of motion. I don't really like carnival rides.
They're the best.
No, they are objectively not the best.
I have fun at the carnival.
That's fine, but are not the best.
As my husband, though, like, you're required to come with me on carnival rides, you know?
Yeah, and I don't really enjoy it.
It's like one of those, like, things, like, it's a date. It's like the romantic date night where you go to the carnival, you know?
I just don't like back and forth or rotating motion.
That's a bummer, because my favorite ride's the Scrambler, which includes both of those things.
Yeah.
I love the Scrambler.
I don't get it. It doesn't look fun to me, especially when kids are puking all over the place.
Well, obviously, puke. Oh my gosh, another thing though, during this carnival scene, when Bertram is, like, explaining the chew to everybody, do you notice that Benny is massaging Smalls' shoulders throughout the whole scene?
No.
So cute.
Aww.
They have like a little connection.
They
you
really
know?
Do.
He really took Smalls under his wing.
So carnival happened. They're right in the high of this win. A few more days go by and they're back at the Sland lot. And Benny starts the day off by whacking a ball so hard he splits the seams. And they think, oh crap, day is done, you mm-hmm. know? And this is when Scotty's like, guys, don't worry about it. I got baseballs at home. I got baseball for days. He runs home, grabs the Babe Ruth ball. Everybody's like, Scotty, you're the man. You got us a ball. You're up to bat.
How do they not see the signature on there when they're playing?
They don't care. They're not paying attention. They just want to play, you know?
Let the kids play, coach.
Exactly.
Just let them play, ref.
Exactly. And so they are like, Scotty, your ball, you're up to bat. He's up to bat, whacks the ball right over the fence. Home run, right into the beast.
This is where I'm not willing to suspend my disbelief. No way Scotty hit the ball that hard that far.
Oh my gosh.
No way. Even if he had all summer to train, that field is huge.
That's fair. But yeah, so he smacks the Babe Ruth ball over the fence. All the kids are like, oh my God, dude, great job. That was crazy. So cool. He was like, no, guys, this is horrible. And they're like, it's fine. We'll get a new ball. Don't worry about it. He's like, guys, that wasn't my ball. It was Bill's ball. And it was signed by some lady, Baby Ruth. And they are, all the kids are like, Babe Ruth! Ah!
They all run to the fence.
Lose their mind. And so now they're all bought in trying to figure out how are they going to rescue this ball.
This is also when Smalls realizes that the Great Bambino and the Sultan of SWAT is the same person as Baby Ruth.
Which was hilarious. So Benny's like, all right, the first thing we got to do, we got to get a new ball and we got to hot swap it.
Mm-hmm.
We got to fake sign it so it'll be a distraction. And so they round up all the money they can to buy a new ball, and Benny forges his signature to put it in Bill's trophy room so nobody will be the wiser.
Because mm-hmm. Bill's out of town, but they're just like, we just got to fool his mom for a couple days.
Yeah.
Until Bill gets back.
And so at this point, one of the kids, it might have been Scotty's, like, why don't we just ask Mr. Myrtle
mm-hmm.
if he can go grab the ball? And they're all like, are you kidding me? He's the one who fed the kid to the beast. We can't do that.
Yeah.
That's a death wish.
I do, though, love this scene where he's hot swapping the ball and his mom comes in and she's like, oh, what are you doing? He's like, oh, just looking at the ball. She's like, oh, don't touch his things, blah, blah, blah. But then she gives a whole backstory of mm-hmm. Babe Ruth and how the ball is special to Bill.
And how one day it'll be his.
Yeah. And I love, like, even though it's kind of a sexist joke, being like, even my mom, an old girl, a grown-up girl, knows who Babe Ruth is. I'm going to be screwed.
Wicked funny. And he's, like, sweating bullets. The kid does a really good job in this scene.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Actually, I don't think I know. He's never told me about that ball. I don't think he's ever said that to me. So good.
Really, really good. So, yeah, now we embark on the adventure to try to get the ball back.
Mm-hmm.
First, they try with a broomstick. Doesn't work.
Beast destroys the broom handle.
Rips it right off. Then they try with a metal, like a metal scaffolding thing with a pot taped to the end to grab it. Doesn't work.
Destroyed.
Beast destroys it.
Toss over the fence like a missile.
Right over. The next one was really smart. It was a vacuum. They basically jerry-rigged three vacuums together to improve the suction and put a catcher's mitt on the end to act as like a little net. Beast pinches it shut and then the vacuums explode because the pressure builds up too mm-hmm. much.
It's actually a catcher's helmet. Like
oh,
face,
yeah, yeah.
Face shield thing.
Yeah, sorry. My bad. Thank you.
Well, the mitt might be hard to suction, you know?
Yeah, no, 100%. It was mm-hmm. like his face mask.
Mm-hmm.
So
they're losing a lot of equipment in this battle.
It costs a lot of money for what they're doing, yeah. The next one they try is to skylift Yaya over. Mm-hmm. Yaya over. And almost works.
He has a ball in his hand.
But the beast comes over and almost mauls him to death. So he nervously drops it. Fair, mm-hmm. fair.
This is the first time we see the beast's wet jowls.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I think this movie but might be why I didn't want a drooly dog.
Well, Luna is a pretty drooly dog.
She's
so.
Not that drooly.
Did you see her face this morning?
That's fair.
You literally came upstairs and you're like, stop drooling on my pillow to her this morning.
That's fair. So then the last one that they try is using Scotty's Erector set to build a catapult, a moving electronic catapult. It works. They got the ball. They launch it over the fence, and the beast jumps up and catches it like they're playing catch.
Reminds me of Free Willy.
I think the beast probably had to jump about as high as Free Willy did.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really jumps up to grab that.
The special effects on the beast jumping were far superior to Free Willy.
I will never get over how bad that looked.
Yeah, science versus nature, and nature won.
Nature won.
That was kind of the last plan.
And so they all go to bed, dejected. And Scotty's like, I'm going to die tomorrow. This is great. And Benny, in his dream, has a dream that the great Bambino comes and speaks to him directly and says, basically gives him a pep talk.
Mm-hmm.
And says, you know, you do what you think is right. But what does he say? Like,
he says just like, why don't you hop over the fence and get it?
Yeah.
Basically.
He also says, like, you know, heroes forever, legends never die, something.
Don't act like you don't know what the line is.
No, I'm actually forgetting it.
Heroes get remembered, but legends never die.
Yeah, I was really close.
That someone has that tattooed on their body somewhere on this planet.
Without a doubt. Probably dozens, yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely someone with a tattoo that says that. And you know what? That's not an insult to people who have that tattoo. If you have it, please let me know. I would love to meet you. I'm, like, being serious.
So, yeah, Benny wakes up and he's like, you know what? I'm going to get that ball. And so he ends up jumping the fence, pickling the beast, grabs the ball, hops back over. But the beast, in his infinite strength, rips the chain, keeping him down, busts through the fence.
Over the fence.
Over the fence, yeah.
More Free Willy action.
And we get a big old chase scene.
Mm-hmm.
They run to, well, Benny runs to the cinema. He runs through Founder's Day. He runs by the pool and eventually back to the Sandlot.
Mm-hmm. Good thing he had those PF Flyers on.
Exactly. And they run back. The fence ends up falling over between the Sandlot and the beast's lair.
Mm-hmm.
And smushes the beast. Really sad. He's just laying there,
he's
crying.
He's whimpering. It makes me so sad.
I really didn't like it. Especially now, like, I'm an adult dog owner. It, like, really, I didn't enjoy that part.
You're like a parent hearing their baby cry in the night, and then you hear another baby cry, and your body reacts.
Yeah, exactly. But luckily, Scotty's a good kid. He gets Benny to help him. They lift the fence off, and the beast is so in love with them that he shows them where he buried all his other balls, and they just have enough baseballs to last a lifetime now.
The kids are like, we could play forever now. The beast also gives big wet kisses.
Big wet kisses.
He puts Luna's tongue to shame. Luna, for those of you who don't know, because why would you? Luna has, like, a ridiculously long tongue that, like, hangs so far out of her mouth. She cannot keep her tongue. When she sleeps, it, like, dries out and crusts on the side of her face because it just can't stay in her mouth.
It's, like, 3 inches longer than the average dog's tongue. I would, like, put money on it, at least.
It's abnormal. And the beast has a way bigger tongue than she does. So that's saying something.
He's a big boy. But they get all these balls, but Scotty's like, look, we can't just, like, leave the fence down with the beast out. We got to go tell Mr. Myrtle that his dog got out.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go to tell Mr. Myrtle, who is
James Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones. And he is blind. And he's like, well, how did he get out and all that stuff? And he's feeling the ball that they came, the Babe Ruth ball. And he's like, this ball's special, and invites Benny and Scotty in.
He recognizes that if the kids went through that much trouble to get the ball back, Scotty's probably in some type of trouble.
Yeah. And so we find out that, well, first he's like, here, you know what? I'll trade you my ball. And he gives them a ball that's signed by the entire Yankees team instead of just Babe Ruth. What is it, the 27 Yankees or something?
1927.
Yeah,
because he finds out, he's like, George signed this? And you find out that Mr. Myrtle is a pretty big-time baseball player himself.
Yeah, he played with those guys, all of the famous players of yore. He even says that he would have beaten Babe Ruth's home run record, but he really liked to crowd the plate, and he took a ball to the temple, which knocked out his sight. Sad. And so he says, look, as long as you guys come by once a week and talk baseball with me, you can have this ball.
Mm-hmm.
So Scotty brings it back home. When Bill gets home, he has to kind of tail between his legs, tell him what happened, but at least he has a makeup ball. That's pretty damn great.
Yeah. It's like you say, like, if you break something you're borrowing, you have to replace it better than new or whatever.
I say that?
No, it's like a saying people have. Oh. You know, if you like break something you're borrowing, you have to replace it better than you found it, or you return something better than you found it, or whatever.
Yeah.
I think Scotty did that.
He definitely does.
I also want to say that medically that can happen. If you get hit hard enough in the head, you can detach your occipital nerve to that your eyeball.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
It happens. Detached.
But yeah, we are at the last part of the movie. We jump forward to the future, back to the narrator who's at a baseball game, and we find out he's like in the booth.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, not narrating the game.
Commentating.
Yeah.
Narrating our movie, but commentating the game.
Yep. And he's telling us that Benny, you know, he made it. He kind of tells us what happened to some of the Sandlot kids.
Mm-hmm. And pretty successful life for almost all of them.
Except for Bertram.
They don't know what happened to him. They said he disappeared in the 60s.
Yeah, he got in really into the 60s and no one ever saw him. So that's troubling. But Benny made it to the majors and he had a pretty good career. He had, you know, he was still the Jet, but people were worried that he lost a step. And the movie ends with Benny the Jet Rodriguez stealing home. Pretty ballsy move.
Getting in a pickle.
And, no, he doesn't get in a pickle. He just runs straight home.
No, with so many other pickles.
Super fast. Fast guy. Fast guy Benny. And that's kind of how the movie ends. And that's when we realize, for sure, in case you missed it, that the narrator was also Scotty in the future, sportscaster man. But one thing I really liked is it shows us the picture of the Sandlot kids that mm-hmm. you were talking about. But he also has the faked Benny forgery Babe Ruth ball, the Babe Ruth ball that the Beast ate up, and then the
1927 Yankees ball in his little office.
Yeah, which was really cute.
And he's wearing the baseball hat that he was wearing in the beginning of the movie that Benny told him to burn.
Yeah.
He's wearing that in the booth as well.
It has a really nice ending. It really wraps up quite nicely. Mm-hmm.
And you could tell him and Benny are still friends because they're thumbs upping each other from the field in the booth.
Yep. Not an impartial commentator, but that's okay. And then we get the credit scene, which has the absolutely fantastic score. You got, like, literally look up Sandlot credits on YouTube to listen to this song. It's really friggin' good.
You also forgot to say, most importantly, that the Beast's name is Hercules.
Oh, yeah, I did want to mention that. I love that name for him.
Well, you know why it's interesting is because in the movie, the kids say people thought Babe Ruth wasn't, he was more than a man, but less than a god.
Mm-hmm. Like Hercules.
Like Hercules, and that's the dog's name.
Mm-hmm. Because they built him up to be
more than a dog, but less than a beast.
Perfect. That was very poetic. I like that.
That's what it was, though.
Well, they didn't explicitly say that. That was a Jess Mendez original.
Got a lot of those.
But yeah, pretty fun movie. Really cute. Like I said in the recap, like, we just kind of jumped around days and, like, we're given little scenarios to show the boys coming together or how they grew or something like that. And it was kind of fun just having, like, those, like, little bit disjointed scenes of them just hanging out before the real conflict started.
Mm-hmm.
I actually really liked that.
I did too, but it didn't feel disjointed to me.
No. Yeah. That was a poor choice of words.
I just liked how it made it natural to think like, oh, Scotty joins their group. It's kind of awkward. And they like really do embrace him. They have some fun together. They get in trouble and then his friends have his back, you know?
Yeah. They weren't like, they didn't like set up the conflict at the very beginning of the movie and then like work around that the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It was really at the beginning was just kind of like coming of agey,
setting
just
the scene.
General stuff, exposition, and then plot.
Mm-hmm. But I kind of liked it. It was like a slow burn in the beginning, but it wasn't so outlandish because you see the setup coming with the mm-hmm. ball. You know the ball is going to have some significance. You know that his relationship with his stepdad is kind of rocky, you know? And then you also know how badly Scotty wants to fit in. So it makes sense he'd offer up the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. I think it would probably be tough to replicate that successfully.
Yeah.
Especially with kids, you know, kid actors, because it's kind of tough to make them endearing enough that you want to watch them. But this movie definitely was able to do that.
It was a solid ensemble cast.
Yeah.
Because Scotty was endearing, as you put it, almost like painfully, not awkward, but like painfully like eager almost to meet with people, but like incredibly brave. I would not have done that as a kid. Mm-hmm. Just like roll up like that. Yeah. He did it. Like he is brave, but like, I don't know. He was, you could just tell he wanted so badly to be friends with someone and was willing to like almost try anything. And I'm happy he fell into such a group of good kids, you know, that didn't end up like taking advantage of that. I think they tease each other, him, but they tease all of,
yeah,
like they all tease each other, you know? And it wasn't like really mean teasing.
No, no.
It wasn't bullying. It was just like, I hate saying kids being kids, but like in a way it was kind of just kids being kids.
It was, yeah. One of the cutest things he did was after the first day of hanging out with them, he ran home and wrote down like in his journal, baseball stuff to remember, and then wrote down the Great Bambino. So cute.
And I love how he runs into his house after the first day. He goes, "Mom, guess what?" to tell her what happened. Cute. He's so cute.
Scotty was great.
Mm-hmm. But then Benny was just such a pure soul. You know, like really looking out after everybody, like recognizing that Scotty wants to fit in so badly and like really like mentoring him into it.
Yeah.
You know, because he's clearly the cool kid, you know.
Cool guy, Benny.
He's the leader. I loved Benny's character. He was almost like not human.
Yeah.
You know.
And they also gave a lot of the kids screen time. Mm-hmm. Like in the game against the Bougie kids, they showed every kid at bat. They showed them all making a good play.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of them had their own little side story. Like Squints has this whole thing with Wendy. Ham has his whole rivalry with the Bougie team, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of his scene to steal.
Yeah, yeah, is the one that goes over the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they all, like, it was definitely about Benny and Scotty specifically, but all the kids were featured pretty nicely, which I think is important, but also is partially why those scenes where they didn't have the exposition scenes worked, is because they were introducing the characters and you liked them. Mm-hmm. You liked those kids.
Yeah. Or even like Bertram, like he's the one that brings the cha. You know, mm-hmm. Everyone has their thing to add.
Yep.
Which is kind of cool.
So yeah, I really enjoyed the kids. I thought that was great. And that's something we talk about a lot with the movies that heavily feature children actors, is how good are they? And this movie, they were really good.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good.
So some things I liked. Obviously, the baseball nostalgia is like super real.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely someone who played for fun. I didn't play like Benny did, where it was like life, like I had to play every day. But there were some kids that were like that as a kid too, mm-hmm. you know? So that was cool to see the differentiation and how explicit they were with it.
Yeah.
And what pushed Benny to be a major league player versus the kids just kind of moving on with their lives and having a good time.
Yeah. Kenny did end up playing AAA ball.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
And then he has he coaches his kids on the heaters, which was his like special throw.
Yep.
But not only baseball nostalgia, but like the childhood nostalgia is like so strong. This movie took place in the 60s. And that being said, like the set and the costuming was awesome.
It was great. Yeah.
But even though it took place in the 60s, it felt super accessible, I think, to everyone's childhood. It was kind of timeless. Yeah. Even though it happened in the 60s, it was very timeless.
You could take a little kid right now and show them this movie and they would like identify with it in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree.
The only thing that would probably be wicked outdated is obviously the fashion, but then like the erector set, you know, like that was about it.
Or the lack of technology.
Yeah.
What do you mean they're not playing Minecraft in your house? No, but it felt like a timeless movie despite the setting of being in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like a sucker for 60s fashion. So like I really, really enjoyed the costuming and the cars and all that. All that jazz. Living in a pink house. What about you?
Yeah. I think we touched on everything that I like so far. The one thing that we hadn't touched on, though, that I really loved was the ball rescue scene.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way that they had different props. It was really fun.
Yeah. I love when the vacuum exploded and Smalls is just covered in dust.
That was not Smalls.
Oh, Timmy?
It was Tommy.
Tommy. They kind of look alike.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, it was Tommy. And that was another, just like, you know, giving another kid the spotlight for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I loved that. They were using what they had and being like what they could, doing what they could do to be in like ingenuitive. Is that a word? But yeah, it was really fun. Like using a Wheaties box as like a periscope for some reason and stuff. It was fun.
Mm-hmm. I liked, like, that always made me nervous as a kid too. Like watching this, I'd be like, I could never construct that as a rescue thing. And it made me feel like super not creative. And like, if I was in this quote unquote pickle that they were in, I would just be screwed.
The like skylift that they made for Yaya with like the bicycle to like lower and raise him and stuff was hilarious.
So dangerous.
Oh my God. Yeah. And then the music was surprisingly pretty good. There was good pop songs that they put in were good choices, but also the stuff that was written for the movie was really solid.
Mm-hmm. I used to, when I burned CDs,
yeah,
I used to put a lot of these songs on like randomly in the middle of a mix.
Yeah, they were very good mm-hmm. choices all around. They fit the movie, they fit the theme, they fit whatever scene that they were in. They were solid.
Mm-hmm. What's the song that plays when he kisses Wendy Peppercorn?
Those magic moments, or these magic moments.
This magic moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, such a good song. Yeah, the music really fit the movie.
Yep.
I don't think they, like, dated the movie either.
No, not at all. I mean, all of those are classics today, so.
Yeah, no, for sure. Do you have any other likes that you're wanting to bring up?
Just want to reiterate something I said in the intro. It really just makes you nostalgic, or made me nostalgic, for an experience that was not my own, but was just so relatable and fun that, like, you couldn't help but be nostalgic. Mm-hmm. It was a very, very nostalgic watch.
Mm-hmm. For sure. This is, like, the type of movie I think about when we started this podcast. When yeah. it comes to nostalgia, like, this is probably number one nostalgic movie for me out there.
Yeah, it's nostalgic because, like, it's a good watch. It's a good movie. We watched it when we were kids, but it's also nostalgic in what it's representing, the story it's telling, the time frame it's harkening back to, you know, mm-hmm. Like it is like nostalgia overload.
Makes me really want a summer vacation.
Yeah. Oh
really badly want a summer vacation.
It made me want to go to the park with like a cooler and some brewskis and crack them open. And I friggin' hate beer.
They weren't drinking beer.
I know, but it just like makes you think of that feeling is what mm-hmm. I mean, you know, just like makes me want to go to like a field and be like sweaty and hot. Drink cold beverages.
You never want to be sweaty.
I know. That's how the effect this movie had on me.
You ready for some dislikes?
Yeah. I got a squiggly line.
Oh, yeah. Let me give me your squiggle.
There was some silly things that weren't really necessary, but they didn't like detract, but they didn't really add anything. Like when Benny was running away from the beast, he runs through Founder's Day and like a dude on stilts falls over and launches a cake. It wasn't really needed, but it didn't really take anything away. If you were a kid, you would laugh pretty hard, I think.
I thought you would hate that scene because you don't like when cakes get destroyed.
I don't, yeah.
You really don't like it.
But that one was just like, it didn't really add anything. So I was like, yeah. There was like a couple of times where there were little things like that. Overall, the movie was pretty buttoned up. So like, I felt like they stood out a little bit as like, they're looking to get a laugh for little kids.
Yeah, it is a movie for little kids. So
yeah.
Kind of throw a bone to the little ones sometimes.
That's why it's just kind of like a little bit of a squiggly line.
Mm-hmm. You ready for my biggest dislike?
Yes.
I really like this movie. I do. But there's like one thing that upon the rewatch got under my skin so badly and it kind of ruined a lot of things for me.
What? I feel like you're not serious.
I am serious. Okay. It really did upset me and it kind of grated on my nerves and I don't know. But they said the word pickle way too much. God. They said it so many times. We get it. It's a pickle. Okay. We get figuratively it's a pickle because you lost the ball. But also there is a thing in baseball called a pickle. And it came up. Pickles don't happen that much when you're playing baseball.
No. And also you can't pickle with just one person with the beast. You have to have two people.
And I guess the fence was the other pickle.
I guess.
But that wasn't the big one I'm thinking of, honestly. They just said pickle so much. And I was like, okay, they're saying pickle so much is losing meaning for me. What does it even mean? What is a pickle?
A Jess nitpick. I like it. This is like the first real nitpick you've had.
No, I just really like this movie. And that's the only thing I could think of. And I felt like I had to be fair. The other thing that bothered me was they do this whole thing with like, where are they now at the end? And they say Hercules lived to 119 in dog years.
I think it was 91.
Very old.
Like, incredibly old.
Especially for such a big dog.
Yeah.
But they never said what happened to Mr. Myrtle. They just take his nice ball And then they're going to talk baseball with him once a week, and they never circle back to that.
I was sad about that, too.
I guess, like, James Earl Jones, you know, he, maybe he was too big, and they could only get him for, like, 5 minutes, you know?
Maybe.
Squeeze that time in with him. I don't know. Also, is this a Field of Dreams sequel? Is this, like, what happens to him after that movie? Like, he just lives in a house with a big dog?
I don't think so, because continuity-wise, he would have needed to be blind in Field of Dreams.
Oh, I guess it would have to be a prequel, because this is the 60s.
He also would have needed to be blind. He was not blind.
Yeah, but...
So, no. But there is another Field of Dreams link. The guy who played the Great Bambino in this movie was in Field of Dreams as well.
Hmm. I guess it's just that time. You know, like, sometimes you just have, like, all these movies coming out where the main actor is doing, like, the same thing over and over again.
Hmm.
Maybe this is James Earl Jones' baseball era, and it was an attempt to, like, rid Star Wars off of him.
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe.
I don't know. Never mad about James Earl Jones being in anything, though.
No, never. What a great voice.
He's 90 now.
He was good in this movie, too. I liked his little chuckles.
He's good in everything he's in.
I know, I liked it.
Let's be real.
The only other thing, yeah, I said, like, the in the recap, the, like, 4th of July scene, they could have just cut that. I wouldn't have even cared. The only other thing, though, was some of the stuff around women, especially, didn't age that great. Had a lot of little jabs at, like, them playing, like, girls and stuff. It was definitely, like, time-appropriate, but didn't add anything. You didn't need it. So that stuff didn't age super solid.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're not wrong. I think I just been, like, giving it a pass in my head because I love this movie.
Yeah.
You know? And I grew up with all brothers. So I guess, like, some of those things were just part of my childhood, you know?
Yeah. It was accurate. It was definitely accurate.
But no, it's a good point. It's good to bring up.
Yeah, not really, just kind of nitpicks for me in terms of negatives.
It's a pretty good movie as a whole.
It's a pretty good movie, yeah.
So, I mean, it's a wine for me.
It's a wine for me as well. It was so fun to watch. So nostalgic. Like you said, it's what this what we imagined when we made this podcast.
Mm-hmm. This is like a poster child for nostalgia, this movie. And I would recommend anybody to watch it. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't like baseball, I think it's worth watching.
The baseball is actually pretty light in this movie.
Yeah, I also actually, something else I was thinking about. When the kids are playing, there are a lot of cuts.
That makes sense to me.
You know, so like the kids are obviously not baseball gods. And it's something that just stuck out to me because I've been looking for that more often. But either way, the pieces that they cut in, they look really intense. They look really, really good.
And I'd imagine trying to get kids to act and play baseball at the same time would have been incredibly challenging.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what casting was like for this. Did they, like, cast out some of their baseball skills, you know?
I have no idea. That's a great question.
Probably would have had to, because you have to at least look athletic when you're doing these things.
One thing, though, I just saw in my notes I forgot to mention, because I talked about the score a lot. The scene where he was doing the pickle with the beast had a great, like, old Western standoff type song.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. Really good.
Mm-hmm. The music complemented the scenes. They didn't overpower the scenes.
Yeah. I actually looked into the dude that did the music a little bit, and he actually, from the late 70s to the early 80s, played violin on most of John Williams' L.A. scoring sessions, and credits him for learning much about the film music composition.
Learning from the best.
Isn't that kind of cool?
Yeah.
And he went on to do Anastasia. I think we mentioned that in the intro, which is one of my favorites. I really love the soundtrack for Anastasia. So pretty good. He hasn't done much recently, though.
That's okay. I mean, when you do Anastasia and The Sandlot, I'm assuming you can retire pretty early.
Yeah, this movie is really great, though. I really recommend you checking out the soundtrack and paying attention to it. It's one of my favorite we've listened to.
Did the music for Anastasia win an Academy Award?
I think he just lost out, if I'm remembering what I saw on Wikipedia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now that that's over, we have to let our own beast outside. I'm sure she needs to pee.
Yeah, probably.
So anyway, if you like what you're listening to, please reach out to us. You can find us on social media at Wine or Milk Podcast on Instagram, at Wine or Milk on Twitter, facebook.com/WineOrMilk. You can reach us on email at WineOrMilkPodcast@gmail.com. We have a website, WineOrMilkPodcast.com.
You nailed it.
Mm-hmm. It's about time. What are we doing next? What do you want to watch?
I I don't know. I haven't picked yet.
You are so unprepared.
Yeah, I don't know yet.
What does your gut say?
No idea. I'll let you know when we watch it.
Oh my gosh. Well, cliffhanger.
Yeah, I literally have no idea.
Cliffhanger ending. Well, you know what? If there's something you really want to see, message us and maybe that'll help Kyle out.
Yeah, I have no idea. So it'll be a surprise to all of us.
I picked so well this time, I blew your mind.
Yeah, I have to follow it with something good.
You better not follow the milk.
I know. That's partially why I'm struggling right now. I really need to make sure I pick a winner.
It's been a minute since we've had a milk. We're due for a milk, honestly.
I know, and it can't be me again. It can't be me. You've had like one or two milks, and I've had like 100. And this is only our 39th episode.
I genuinely pick the ones that I enjoy. That's the problem.
So do I. Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. Definitely check out The Sandlot. It was so much fun to revisit, and we will see you next week.
Toodaloo.